Fill my feet that they may carry me in faith and knowledge. Fill my soul with the gift of light, that it may shine with love eternal. Amen. And that actually truly is some of the gifts that I feel I've been given here is your willingness to share with me some of your stories. Having been a speaker several times, I have this vision of a camp once where we really sit down with each other and we listen to everybody's story. We had a chance to do that as an experiment, as a counseling one year, because people were willing to go along with kind of my crazy idea, but I learned a depth of there was a level of depth and richness that I learned about my fellow council ring members, even though we'd been in deep prayer, we'd felt the Holy Spirit move, all of that, but there was a different understanding about who they were and how they got to be the wonderful people they were. From the windows of heaven today is another picture of the stone altar that you have out here, but it's higher up the hill, it looks like. So if the inn hasn't moved, then I think I have my geography right. And it's a beautiful picture. I'm not going to try and guess who this is, but anybody? That's Franklin. All right. But this is on the sixth week, the seventh day, and it says, "Prayer, the mightiest force. When in all history has there been amassed so much knowledge as in this past 50 years? Through psychiatry, nearly all the mysteries of the subconscious realm have been brought to light. And yet, we have learned about man's, and yet what we have learned about man's soul, which was not brought to light by Christ." Did I read that right? "Yet what have we learned about man's soul, which was not brought to light by Christ? For years, we have been flying through the air, and now with television and sending pictures through space, for years we have harnessed the waterfalls to turn the great turbines. Now we harness the split atoms to fight battle for us. We are setting in motion forces which our forefathers could not even dream of. But how many of us have learned to harness the power of prayer? That power is greater than the radio or the television and the power of love is greater than bombs. 50 years ago, Steinmetz, electrical wizard and author of more than 300 inventions, said, "For the past 50 years, we have been working with the laws of matter. 50 years from now, we shall be making a study of the laws of spirit. When it comes time, we shall take love into the laboratory and find more power in love than there is in electricity. When prayer is used with the same confidence that we now use the forces of matter, we shall achieve more in one generation than the world has achieved in the last 400 years. The 50 years are up now. Let's actually take love and prayer into the laboratory of spirit and expect to witness miracles as great as the miracles of radio and the atomic bomb, and greater. Our beloved Heavenly Father, may thy love flowing into us create us in a new love, a new understanding, and a new life. May we step deep into the quiet of the upper room, the laboratory of love, and there discover thy precious truth so that we may build for thee thy kingdom according to the plan and purpose laid out in the beginning by Jesus Christ, thy Son. Amen." And the scripture that's quoted is Matthew 6, verse 10. "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. So I just love the way God works. I had a different prayer this morning, but I heard it at morning meditation. And it was actually on the back, from my first camp, I still have the divine plan that was in my little packet of information. And on the back of that was a psalm of guidance written by Glenn, and we so beautifully heard the youth this morning at that. I wish I'd had my camera. Maybe somebody got a picture. But I loved the stone pulpit with the iPad and the iPhone. Reading, that's how I brought my Bible this time, by the way, because I was, compacting things a lot. And so I just thought it was such a wonderful image with all this history and all this present with us as well. So thanks, thanks to the high schoolers who were willing to share that with us. The other thing I thought I'd read that I brought along is, somehow, I got a hold of a copy of the Fellowship Messenger from February and March from 1955. And I don't want to take this out of context, because I will read some more from this, but I just thought it was so fitting as we watched the satellite last night pass through the heavens. I'd like to read you what Glenn wrote in 1955. It has some remnants of us working with the heavens here. Last year, we celebrated the 25th anniversary of Camps Farthest Out with 50 camps all over the world. We are now starting on the second 25th year period with confidence and anticipation that when we celebrate the 50th anniversary, there will be 100 camps. When our 100th anniversary arrives, the camps may be spreading to Neptune, Mars, Uranus, who knows? I have a suspicion for a long time that they already have one in heaven, led by Paul and Isaiah, with Miriam leading the rhythms and Gabriel singing. Just think of the blessing that it would be, that will be compelling to us when they hold their weekly broadcasts of love for the world. Maybe that is where the flying saucers are coming from now. I propose that we make it our hobby this year to collect all those saucers we can, and fill them with our surplus of love and joy, and relay them out to the unloved and unjoyful people of the world, while we pray that our government follows suit, sending our surplus wheat, rice, and milk, and butter to the starving millions of the world. The world has made such miraculous advances in science and invention that we are challenged to stretch our minds, envisioning similar advances for our spiritual world. More to come on that tomorrow, but I did think that was appropriate given one of the beautiful things about that CFO International presentation that Ken did yesterday, and how nice it was of you, Jay, to show the website, is they have a resource tab that has lots of writings from a lot of early folks in CFO. And we also have little angels that are keeping archives and finding things. I remember the first time I was chairperson at Pacific Redwoods, somebody said, "Well, you brought your big car, didn't you?" And I said, "Well, why?" And they said, "Well, there's this trunk." And I said, "What do you mean trunk?" And somebody actually unearthed this old steamer trunk that I'm sure is actually quite valuable. And in there was the history of this camp, all mangled together. No one had sorted through anything in years. And I was very curious about Glenn Clark and his early works and how they had evolved over time. And actually, there were letters from Glenn, handwritten letters from Glenn to the camp. There was letters about miracles and healings, and it was just this wonderful treasure. And so I'm very happy to hear that CFO International has, and actually the ACFO office keeps those archives present for those of us who are interested in them. But this comes from one of the things they have to offer, and I would highly recommend it. It's taking excerpts from things and synthesizing it. And the title of it's called Silence, Simplicity, and Sequence. And I've talked a lot about silence, but I haven't talked a lot about simplicity, and there's a great quote in here I'd like to read you. It comes from the thought farthest out. Not until I have traveled far, not until I have dreamed much, was I big enough and simple enough to know the truth, which every child knows wherever he plays the simplest games of childhood. The most powerful, irresistible motion there is, as well as the most effortless, is the motion of falling. Whoever can, when confronted with a crisis, let himself fall the most effortlessly into this one, who knows the best secret of life. So we're always reaching up, but it's very effortless to fall. And I think it was Parker Palmer who said, the way to God is down. And it's really about, for me, it's about really letting go, surrendering, allowing what is instead of trying to fight what is. There's an effortlessness to that that for some reason I show up with a lot of resistance to, and I think that continues to be my work. And I'm always surprised at the miracles that occur in my life when I truly can let go. But we all have lots of family patterns. We have beliefs, lots of beliefs about how things should be instead of the faith. And in the midst of all these moves, and if you haven't figured out, my home and my space is pretty important to me because I help other people design theirs. And so to be uprooted so many times and not be able to take the things I value with me that I think I value. So there's been this wonderful kind of downsizing that's occurred in my life over the last 5 to 10 years. And I am fixing on that backpack and figuring out God is trying to teach me that my home can really be anywhere. So I have become acquainted with that effortlessness at times, and in this last move, the very generous souls who allowed me their mountaintop location also gave me a little plaque. And on that plaque, I just love it, and unfortunately I do not remember the person who wrote this, but I love it, and I'm sure she'll, I do know it was a woman, but I'm sure she'll forgive me. But it's on the plaque, it says, sometimes the only available transportation is a leap of faith. And I feel like I've been leaping more than my fair share right now, which is also something I need to look at. So that just that effortless relaxing into the spirit, trusting completely in God. Talked a little bit about trust in our prayer group the other day, and an acronym that I've heard for trust, some of you may have too, was totally relying upon Spirit's timing. And I have a very strong will, and when I can feel it and see it up here, I think it ought to manifest pretty quickly in my life. And that hasn't been the case all the time. Or I haven't had the people with me that were ready to move at the same pace I was. And sometimes that wasn't the correct pace. God has a rhythm and a pace that sometimes I pay attention to. And my whole first 40 years, I was very busy. I had my connection with God, but I was also very willful, and so I could make things happen. I was the boss in the organization, so I figured that out real quickly. If you want to do what you want to do, you just become the boss. Now, I think I did that in the most loving way possible, but as I look back on it, I didn't honor other people's rhythm and timing. I didn't honor other people's response to change. So I'm getting to take a little look at that again, a little refreshing look in the mirror as I walk through my current journey. A bit of prose, relax all manipulation to arrive somewhere else. All effort to obtain some better, happier, more enlightened state, and simply be this effortlessness. That is awake, alive, bright, loving, with nothing needing to be done to make it so. So that's one of my cues recently, is if it requires a lot of effort, I'm manipulating it with my own mind and my own ego, and that's God's little guidance system at this point saying to me, this isn't the place. So I was just guided to talk with you a little bit about my family of origin. I told you a little bit about my one childhood experience, but I wanted to tell you just a little bit more. I was born into a very loving household. I had a mother and father who loved me. They both had their issues, but beyond those issues, as a child, I lived this unquestioning life until I was about 18, just figuring every other child in the world had had the opportunities that I'd had to grow up with. And through my life, I'm always shocked at some of the stories that I hear and always surprised at people's courage in walking through there. I had the gift of that. I obviously did my learning along the way and experienced my parents' strengths and weaknesses, but love was always at the bottom of that. While I was having these oak tree experiences at two, and this brother kind of coming out of my mother's stomach, which I still didn't understand at the time, I was left alone a lot. My mother was always in the house. I was very well cared for. But there were clearly other things to do. And we moved in next door to a woman who had, within the last 2 months, lost her husband at the age of 45. And her husband worked for the telephone company. And her name, I don't even know if I know her first name. That's not interesting. She was always Grandma Jelly. I always thought if I wanted to be a grandma, I would want to have that as a last name. Grandma Jelly just sounds so good. And she was this quiet, prayerful presence that, again, was able to love me. And although we didn't communicate a lot about my experiences because I didn't even know how to describe them, I experienced that same deep level of peace in her on a regular basis. It usually was connected with the fact that I knew that there was a cookie jar on top of her refrigerator, and that I knew if I didn't ask, that always at the end of our being together, I would receive a cookie. That's why Afterglow and those homemade cookies are so wonderful. So, but she was this loving lady, and she actually was a Christian Scientist. Never heard a lot about her beliefs, and it wasn't until I was in college that I started learning a bit more about that. For my going away present to college, I got a copy of the Christian Science Monitor on a weekly basis in my mailbox, and she had an interesting relationship with our family that I always appreciated, and that was that she was, she lived next door. My parents, my dad at the time, sold peddled drugs to physicians so that they could sell, and my mother was a nurse. So I always thought it was interesting that this woman could not only love my family and love me, but could love who these people were and what they did in the world. And she was my spiritual grandmother. And she was part of our family until she died in her 90s, following her beliefs. My dad was executor for her will, and the last thing I remember, I was in college, is that she sat my mother and dad, and I don't know where my brother was, but I was in the conversation, and she wanted all of us to know that she trusted us to do whatever we needed to do for ourselves. That if we needed to send her to a hospital, we could do that. That she was at peace with whatever practices were needed at the end of her life. that she had received, and she did have a practitioner come see her on a daily basis in her home, and was able to allow that, to allow the people who loved hers need to do whatever they needed to do. And I always thought that was amazing, because most of us towards the end of our life, when we know that it's getting close, if we have the opportunity to know that, hang on very tightly and very rigidly to what we believe. But she was so at peace with her Heavenly Father and her beliefs that she could be cared for anywhere, including an acute care hospital, and that would be okay with her. So after my daughter Sarah, who's now 35, grew up as from the age of 7 in camp, and I watched the gifts that continues to give her. She hasn't attended in a few years, and Mom keeps hoping she'll show up back. And she says, "I'll be there, Mom, but I'll when I have my baby." And I thought, "Okay, fine, great, whatever works for you." And then my mom and I started doing something wonderful that really was precious, and that is my two nephews don't go to church. They didn't have any spiritual training. They're both amazing young men now. But my mom and I just decided it was time for them to go to camp, and their mother and father said it was okay. They didn't want to participate or come, or we even tried to get them to come to a fun night once just to see and support their boys. But it worked the way it needed to them. And Jared and Jordan, also much younger than my daughter, grew up in camp. And Jordan is now graduated from college and is working, and Jared is still in college. And little Jared was just adorable. He, at about 3 years of age, I just watched these children blossom all week long. And I've watched your children and experience the love and how gentle you are with them. And they needed some gentleness and some love in their life, and it was really a wonderful time. Jared, at the age of 3, because his older brother had gotten to go 1 year sooner than he had, we weren't sure we could manage two little ones again. But Jared just came up to me one day and he said, "Aunt Diane, I really want to know when I get to go to UFO camp." And so from the ages of about 3 to 6, it was UFO camp. And provided a lot of comic relief for all of us. I know. There must be. Maybe those folks from Neptune, who knows? So, I had a wonderful childhood. I knew I wanted to be a nurse at a very early age. I happened to have the right people in my life guiding me about what schools to go to. I got some degrees that I didn't think I needed, but they said it was important, so I did. And so that allowed me to promote quickly in a healthcare system. But while I was in nursing school, I latched on to science and research, and I loved it. I still love it. And I sort of forgot about my walk and journey with God, because I was involved in critical care nursing, emergency room nursing, teaching paramedics, doing lots of very scientifically oriented kinds of things. But God had his way with me, and in critical situations, I would have these experiences that no one else would have. Patients would tell me afterwards what they'd experienced when, in fact, they had a flat line on the monitor. They would tell me things from parts of the room that there was no way laying in bed they could know were going on in the room. I had the, and still have the, good fortune to be with many people as they transition into the next life. And It's truly a blessing. I've seen things, I've heard things, I've been part of things that I could not explain scientifically. And it was one of those moments when, in fact, caring for a orthopedic surgeon's son, that was part of this whole small hospital experience, where everybody was doing everything to save his life. A neighbor had actually shot him in the chest with a shotgun. And it was very tragic, very sudden, young, healthy, young man. And I had some experiences at his bedside that I'm not going to go into in detail, but I knew this young man wasn't going to be there much longer. And there's always opportunity for a miracle, and that's what I was praying for. But it was the next day that I heard that voice that told me I needed to leave my job. And I was like, I don't think this is God. This doesn't make any sense. And I knew it wasn't going to make sense to my my family. So that started a very long journey, which I won't go into great detail, but is part of my walk, where I would have these experiences that surprised me, couldn't explain, and when I tried to explain them, there wasn't a lot of listening for them. There were in work circles, there were in friend circles, there were definitely in CFO circles. In fact, I received a lot of guidance and help from some of you prayer giants out there on many levels, both in body and out of body. But so that sort of was, for me and my family, the beginning of the end of life as we knew it. Because I, when I was first married, we actually weren't even going to have children. That was the deal. And then I had the lightning bolt in the baby aisle at Long's drugstore, went home and announced I thought we should have a child. And we did. Next month I was pregnant, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. My daughter is a wonderful, wonderful and amazing young woman. But my former husband was a school teacher, taught second and fifth grade, and is an amazing man, but didn't sign up for this next part of the journey. It was real clear. He did come to CFO a couple times, got involved, and enjoyed it, but was just really kind of shaking his head going, I'm not getting this, and it's not okay with me. So I can remember doing a deal. I said, I just need 6 months off. I'm going to pay attention to this voice. I just need 6 months off, and then I'll be back making my six figures, and you can have the boat and the plane and all the other toys we had. We'd actually by then designed and built four homes, remodeled two, and that means not only was I working 40 to 60 hours a week, but we were doing all of the building ourselves on the weekends. Because his schedule allowed him to have afternoons pretty free, he was doing some of that during the week, but every weekend. In fact, my friends say we had about 10 years of our life there where we, if you wanted to see Diane and Doug, you would come up and bring your hammer and look at the list and just start helping. Now, I learned a lot by doing that, and I'm very grateful for that. But what I had crafted for myself were two worlds. One was my spiritual life that I kept very quiet, because the other dynamic that had started to occur in our family is that it was fun to make fun of me. Both my daughter and my husband had a great time making fun of what was occurring. And so I was fairly insecure about it already, so it was just icing on the cake. And then there came a time when I knew that I no longer even felt good in the space and that I had to leave, and that was a really tough decision. And I really probably couldn't have made it except that there was a betrayal that was involved. And I don't want to go into that. It offered me a great opportunity to shake me to the very bones of my being, and also to express quite a bit of rage at that. Which I'm grateful for, because that was buried somewhere. I had no idea where that was even there. But I knew I needed to move on, and I chose to do that. And remember the mirror we talked about last night? At some point in that process, when I was getting ready to leave the house, because I couldn't, it was so uncomfortable for me to be there, that I was looking for new places to live. And it was It was tough because I like certain spaces and I don't like other spaces, but at this point I was ready to find whatever I needed to find. And I knew I needed to be by myself. We would share childcare of our daughter at the time when she was 16. And that mirror made me take a look at my life. And my real question was, so this drama is going out externally. Where's the drama that's acting itself out inside me? And that drama had to do with me actually betraying my relationship with God, because I was keeping it secret. I was keeping it quiet. I was trying to be accepted. I was trying to fit into a world that no longer fit for me. And I didn't have the capacity at the time to really be able to communicate and love Doug in the way that he needed in order to make that work and to allow him his process in a way, even though he needed to project a lot of stuff on me. We both had some learning about that and communicating. So, and he had moved on. He wasn't too interested in fixing things or figuring things out, and I'm very grateful for that at this point. But here I am searching for the perfect space, and I'm looking at my budget, which is very limited because we have houses and toys and all of these things, and six figures, plus his teaching salary, and we were trying to figure out how to divide all that up, and even that was horrible from my perspective. It was like there were arguments about crock pots. Give me a break. So, lots of learning, lots of rich soil. And what I did was I was looking at these little apartments, and they were just, I felt like I'd moved back to college. I had no furniture because we wanted to keep our home very much the same for our daughter. He decided to live there. I decided to move out. Our daughter moved back and forth between the two homes and was very involved in how all of this was happening. And she also was involved with me looking at places, but I did the original scan and I looked at what I could afford. And it was like moving back into a college dormitory. Practice. I had no furniture, I had orange crates. It was pretty interesting. Anyway, I'd seen this one place that I could afford, and it kind of looked over an elementary school ball diamond, you know, baseball diamond, and so I knew it'd be really noisy during the day, and it was upstairs, and I was in an apartment complex, and I was used to designing and building very beautiful homes. And I walked in, figuring this was probably going to be it, and the walls were painted baby poop yellow. And I thought, not only am I going to have to move into this space, but I am going to have to repaint the thing. I can't even live it. I'm very sensitive to color and sound and light and all those things that I thought were so important. And I can remember telling the lady I would sleep on it. She was real happy to have an older person in the complex, which told me something about what Friday and Saturday nights were going to be like. And very kind, sweet lady was delighted to have me. And I said, I need to sleep on this and I'll let you know tomorrow. But I had a feeling that was my place. And I had another prayer when I got out to my car. And it wasn't a very nice one, but I'm going to share it with you anyway. It was like, okay, God, I can do this, but you need to know I'm not happy about it. So as I was driving home, I'd gotten about 2 miles. He let me get about 2 miles. And up on the a telephone pole was a little sign that said, for rent. And I thought, So I turned the car and I followed the little for rent signs and I got to this condominium complex, little kind of like townhouses almost, that was brand new, very much newer than the apartment I'd looked at, that had a yard, and it overlooked a lake, and I always love places that overlook water. And it was a small lake, no big deal, but I thought, oh my goodness. So I called the number on it, and the the contractor, who was the person who owned and built the places, called and said he would be right over. So I walked into this house, and it was filled with light. There were windows on every wall. It was still needed to be cleaned a little bit, and he came over and he said, "Well, what do you do? And I said, "Well, I work for myself. I'm self-employed." And he said, I'm a nurse. He said, "Well, you work at a hospital?" And I said, no, I have my own business, and I travel quite a bit, but this would be great." And he said, "Well, I just don't know if we can work on getting somebody in here who doesn't have a regular paycheck." And I said, "You mean sort of like a contractor?" And I guess I was just bold enough that he said, "Well, okay." So he said, "Well, so tell me your first name, your last name." He was filling out this little form for me. I think he'd probably decided I could stay. I said, "Dr. Bush, did you work at Marshall Hospital?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Oh, my dad was a doctor there." And he said, "What's your last name?" And he said, "Mathewson." Well, his dad had been very much, his dad was in that room when I forgot to wear the slip. This was 20 years later, by the way. And his dad had just helped die, but I'd been at the bedside with his mom when he died. And his dad and I had developed a very special relationship over time. And I said, "Go home and ask your mom about renting to me and give me a call." So he did that. I came into a freshly painted, super clean apartment, with a townhouse, and he showed up and gave me the key 2 weeks early. So God does have a way of working even when we're in our toughest times sometimes. So I'm going to real briefly tell you about a more current moment that acted in very similar ways. One of the things I've been guided to do is women's circles. And one New Year's Eve, when I was to go to a fun party and join some friends and family there, in Tahoe it had snowed like 6 feet. And when it snows that much, even though they have great equipment, they often have trouble plowing the road. And so I was stuck in my house. It took me like 2 hours just to shovel the first level of steps from my parking lot to the front door. And so it was just a ton of snow. I knew I wasn't going anywhere. So I very innocently thought, "Well, this is a perfect time. It's New Year's Eve. I'll just meditate and get some information about what my next year is going to be like." And I got a download of information that was very specific. And I don't always get specifics, but it was so foreign that I knew it I couldn't have created it. And it was like, you'll have two women's circles a year. This is where they'll be. This is what you'll, who, you know, all of this. And it was so profound that I actually didn't send out the invitations or do anything but write in my journal the continuing information that I was getting, because I thought, this is crazy. And then I went through the whole thing of, well, who would come? And so I sent out the invitation. And that's the other thing I figured. So 6 months went by and I did nothing. Kept getting this, you know, have this circle. Finally, I thought, I've got it. All I have to do is be willing to send out the invitation and send it out. And if nobody comes, not my problem, God. So, and then I thought, well, maybe a few people who know me would come. And so I was guided about who to invite, and some of my CFO and JFO friends showed up to support me, I think, more than anything else, and I was very grateful for that. And we proceeded to have two of these circles. I figured eight was a nice number. That's what I was kind of focusing on. And the first invitation had 17 women show up, and they were three generations. The youngest was about in her early 20s. The oldest was 83. And I watched 2 years unfold with amazing women and with God at the helm. People had new careers. It was just the most amazing process. And I also happened to have a few angels in the room that kept me on track when things seemed a bit unbearable. Well, the one thing I was guided to originally is that would end with a dolphin swim in Hawaii. And one of the things I love to do is swim with spinner dolphins, wild pods of spinner dolphins. And my daughter had actually wanted to do that when she graduated from college. And so we went to do that. And Mom went to support her daughter doing that. And my daughter had an amazing experience, but so did her mother. Again, difficult to talk about, but the pure love and joy I experienced from those animals was absolutely amazing. And the consciousness that I experienced from them as well. So, long story short, this experience was incredible. By the time we got to Hawaii, we were 32. And some people chose to come, some people didn't. And five of us went over early to get ready. We found the perfect place, all of these things. The day before, we'd even gone shopping for all of the things. We'd arranged flights, we'd done everything. It's a lot to organizing 30 women. And I had somebody in charge of that. I organize a lot, so I had somebody in charge of transportation. And we were ready to go buy the perishable food that morning because everybody was arriving that afternoon, and at 4:30 Hawaii time, which meant 7:30 California time, they were all leaving from Oakland. Some people actually flew from the East Coast to get there. I got a phone call, and it was April 2nd, and my daughter always does something strange. And one of the beauties about this circle by this time is there were like six mother-daughter, granddaughter teams in various combinations. And so I got a phone call from the travel lady who said, I want you to know that the airline, there's a sign in front of the ticket counter that says that they have closed. They've gone bankrupt. And all of our tickets are not available. And I thought, okay, this is my daughter's April Fool's joke. That's the only thing it could possibly be with all this planning. Well, long story short, it wasn't. And 32 women gave themselves, well, there were five of us gone already, but 20-something women gave themselves circled up and prayed in front of the ATA airline counter and heard that they were to give themselves 24 hours to see if they could get to Hawaii. And if they couldn't, they'd come up at Plan B. And that meant five of us would be in Hawaii having an experience and everybody else would be at our house in Bodega Bay. So we all, the five of us, went into prayer. Some people went into prayer. Some of the younger ones got on the computer and we watched the prices of flights go higher and higher and higher. And I can remember one of the young women saying, well, a one-way flight is now $1,500. Diane, do you want me to grab this one? And the budget was extremely tight. So I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't even think. I can make things happen. And I went to the airport. I looked the guy in the eye. We did everything we could think of to make this work. And I finally called about, it must have been about 4 or 6 hours later. And I called and I was crying. And I said, I'm really sorry. I've done absolutely everything I can do. And they said, we've decided we're going to give it 24 hours. We've rented a hotel room in Oakland. Some people went home because they lived in the Bay Area. And what occurred is that one by one, they paid additional money to come to be in that circle. When I was at the airport, I looked, and interestingly enough, another Hawaiian Airlines had just bankrupted 2 weeks earlier. So that meant that the flights were completely jammed and extremely expensive. And half of them had a one-way ticket. They could get there, but they didn't know how they were getting home. And I knew after a week with 30 women, I was going to need some time, so I'd rented a little one-bedroom condo so I could have my own private Hawaii experience after that. And I found myself, one by one, they started calling. I'm coming. I'll be arriving such and such. I'm coming. And then one of them happened to call At the time, Hawaiian Airlines had decided to make a new, add another flight. And so the majority, the rest of them, got on another flight. So, that really was the power of prayer. And I watched myself for a week have to publicly exhibit every single one of my control issues in a very big way. But they were able to love me through that, and I was very grateful for that. And we had many wonderful experiences together that week. So I'd like to end just briefly, if you'll stand. I'd like to end with a little bit of movement in a song that I actually heard on a tape from the Iona community again. I heard first from Marcia Johnson at a JFO, Lassen JFO in California. But these are the motions. The words are, take, oh take me as I am. Oh take me as I am. Offer, summon out what I can be. Set your seal upon my heart and live in me. Okay? So the song goes, we're just going to do it a couple times. Take, oh take me as I am. Summon out what I shall be. Set your seal upon my heart and live. Take, oh take me as I am. Summon out what I shall be. Set your seal upon my heart and live in me. One more time. Take, oh take me as I am. Summon out what I shall be. Set your seal upon my